Okay, Mayor Chad Baczynski for his weekly visit, as it is Thursday, and I know property taxes are all the rage of conversation right now, as many of us are getting our property tax notices in the mail this week, and a lot of sticker shock going on, and it's time now to hear from the mayor himself. Good morning, Mayor.
Morning.
I'll get to that in a moment, buddy, but City Council developing the old Taylor Field site. That was kind of secured yesterday. We knew this was coming. So what's next in that project then?
Yeah, so we approved to apply for some funding so we can actually offset some of those infrastructure costs. And that's the first step is that we actually need to get the underground pipes and that all sorted out so that way we can get ready to make sure it's proper service land ready to turn into development. So that'll be the first planning and construction that'll happen over the next couple of years.
And besides that, council is going through a list of items to find savings. And the list was made by administration, right, after council asked them to find somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.5 million in savings. I believe I got that right. So far, so good?
Yep.
Okay. And that's to help lower the mill rate during budget talks. You've done that. Is this something that was taken care of in the last budget, or is this for the future budget? I just want to clarify that.
Yeah, so this was already accounted for in the budget that we had already approved for 2025. So this is savings still that we had to find within 2025 because of the 0.5% that was approved by council to reduce the mill rate by initially. So this is to make sure that we make good on the savings that were required from council during budget time.
So you cut about a half mil from the transit fleet reserve, 600,000 from the now removed carbon tax for utilities, and 44 grand from the mosquito control budget. You're going to hear about that, right, aren't you?
Well, just to clarify, the only reason we actually went down that path is because we got new information during council yesterday that because we're so far into the year, we're able to actually realize those savings without actually having that impact. So we have better numbers to go by, basically.
Okay, Mayor Chad Baczynski, lots of people getting their property tax notices in the mail this week. I was one. I'm paying probably a little over $700 more than I was. I've just got a text here from Dana said, please share this with the mayor. Got my tax notice. My taxes went up $2,300 this year. Now paying $13,000 in taxes. Ask the mayor if he thinks this is reasonable. Ask him how much his taxes went up and how would it feel if his were $1,100 per month after tax dollars. What do you think here? He calls it obscene. What do you call it?
I totally understand the shock and I'll answer the question. Mine went up, somewhere around that neighborhood too. I go back to it. It's not a situation that I think, especially in a brand new council, wanted to be in. But the reality is over the last decade, we've chopped that mill rate for year after year, and we found ourselves in a situation where the work that we have to get done to make sure we don't have failures of our critical and core infrastructure, those things have to happen. So, it's a challenging situation, but what we're looking to is to continue to learn and find ways where we can find reasonable increases, and that is what we're trying to do, is trying to find reasonable or low increases going forward, but still maintaining those critical components of our city.
I don't ever see our taxes coming down, and I don't think you do ever either, but do we have to start looking at revenue generation outside of property taxes? Is it sponsorship selling? Is it you guys working a car wash with council on the weekend raising funds here? Do you start thinking about, how do we get revenue sources outside to assist this?
There's a number of factors, and I'll take the car wash thing back, and we'll talk about it. But you're right, and part of that is I've talked about it before. Is we have infill properties, we have a level of sprawl that has caused a high cost of infrastructure for a lower volume of units, and so. As we see, and we actually approved a development yesterday in council where we have a multi-unit dwelling going up in a space that, maybe traditionally 25 years ago would be a single family home. These are things that we can do to increase the revenue within our city using existing infrastructure. So those are tactical ways that we can do.
Mayor Chad Baczynski, I thank you for your time and encourage anyone else. I've got lots of texts coming in, 1-877-300-7275. So wake me up when it's all over, when I'm wiser. And- Let's take you to Saskatoon Rider Training Camp. Today, day 10. And we've been all over the last 9 days. Shane Clausen is joining me now from Saskatoon, who's been filling in for Britton Gray there and working alongside of the Green Zone the last few days. Overall, Shane, what's your general feeling of this camp so far? How are you feeling about what you've seen?
Well, I've done three of these, Greg, and I'd say this is probably the most positive, the most energetic, and the most confident camp I've seen from the riders in the three I've covered. Just the fact that Corey Mace brings such a high energy and intensity to his practices, I think there's a lot of buy-in from the players, and I think they realize, too, that they could be a pretty good football team this year with the West Division wide open and the East as well. So there's high expectations for the group, and you know, they're sure acting like it at camp, and they're all having a lot of fun as well at the same time and get along. This group likes each other.
Do we have to temper those expectations that you're excited about and a lot of other people are because of the injury bug that's going? What's the latest there?
Well, that's going to be a big question, and it's a bit of deja vu. It's the offensive line again that's getting hit. We heard the Sean McCune injury, that he's going to be out for a while. And then yesterday, Coach Mace confirmed to us that Philippe Gagnon, the newly signed offensive lineman out of Montreal, he's going to miss some time with a torn bicep. Mace doesn't think it's going to be season-ending, but regardless, McEwen and Gagnon are your two big signings on the offensive line. And, I mean, at this moment, both of them might not play a game for the Riders this year. So who knows what happens next with the offensive line, but it's definitely going to be left to some of the guys on that offensive line like Zach Fry and Logan Ferland to step up and replace those two big bodies.
Shane Clausen from Saskatoon Rider Training Camp. So take us through the next couple of days here. It's probably going to be pretty light, isn't it, as we go to Winnipeg this weekend?
That's my guess. I don't know if the pads will be on today, but if I had to guess and flip a coin, I'd say they won't be, just given the fact, I mean, the Riders have had, I feel like 6 of the 9 days they've had so far have been padded days, and I don't think they want to pick up any injuries going into the Winnipeg game. So they'll practice one more time today at Griffith Stadium, starting in about 35 minutes here. And then tomorrow they'll have their walkthrough where they just kind of, you know, get ready for the game. And then they'll hit the road, hit the airport, and go to Winnipeg. So a lighter 2 days, and then they'll be back in Regina come next week.
And after that game on Saturday, 2 o'clock our time, I imagine the cuts come.
So I'm not exactly sure when the cuts come, but I was talking with some executives with the Riders, and they were saying that you might not actually have to see any cuts until closer to the end of the preseason. So the Riders actually have a bit more time than you would think to make some cuts. So it doesn't mean they have to wait until then to make cuts, but nonetheless, there's no rush on the cuts, it sounds like. So both the players and the coaches get a bit more time to you know, reevaluate and think about the roster.
All right, my friend. Thank you so much. You're going to the Oil next week? You're going to go check out a home game?
I'm trying. I got family in Germany coming, so we got to convert them all to Oilers fans, and I got to find some financial...
Well, they got to be Draisaitl fans. I think he's from Germany, isn't he?
They're big soccer guys, go from rural Germany, Greg. They really know hockey. My one cousin who's coming, he didn't even know who Wayne Gretzky was when we took a picture with him last time he was here. So,
all right, buddy. Thanks for the update from training camp. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Go Oil.
Well, this is going to be fun. The Cathedral Village Arts Festival is back, and we saw it grow into record numbers last year, and I bet with the weather warming up here, it's going to be a pretty big success, and it really cranks up with activities tonight through Friday and Saturday. And to tell you a little more about the festival and how it all began is Don Young from the Cathedral Village Arts Festival. Don, let's start there. How did it all get started?
Well, this is the 34th year of the festival, and the legend is that it started in a guy's backyard, Ken Mitchell, who was sort of a writer and a musician around town back in the early 90s. He had a few buddies over. He brought their 12 strings, a case of beer, and a bunch of pot, I suspect. And they had kind of a backyard festival. Next year, it became like two or three houses, and then then it was the block, and then it was a couple of blocks. And over the 34 years, it's grown into, well, it's now, you know, Regina's only major arts and music festival. And last year, we had an estimated 50,000 people on 13th during the street fair day. And if we get good weather this week, I imagine we'll have that many as well this year.
What makes this festival so unique, Don?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think two reasons. First of all, we are a free festival. We don't charge a dime. 60 performers, 8 venues, like great, great musicians and actors and storytellers, all free. That's the first thing. However, we do pay everybody. It's a weird business model, right? We don't charge any money, but we pay everybody. And then the second thing is it's grassroots community run. And I mean that really sincerely. We have about 150 volunteers. This year, at least half that many are young newbies joining the festival. So it's not a bunch of old boomers, right? There's a bunch of young kids joining the festival as volunteers, which is great. The message that we try and put out is that community counts. You know, if you want to make the world a better place, go shovel your neighbor's snow in the winter. That's kind of the ethic of the festival, and people seem to like that.
This show generates the biggest buzz Friday and Saturday. I know this weekend is going to be packed, so let's take it a day at a time. If you could go through and look at, say, Friday, if you had to pick one, maybe two highlights, what do you think people should look for on Friday?
Too many choices. But let's just stay with the tent. Everybody knows the big tent in the Holy Rosary Green Space. We have a Mexican mariachi rock band. So it'll be loud and it'll be caliente, right? So that'll be good. After then, we have a Ukrainian rock band. And then closing out the night, we have everybody's favorite, the Andino Sons.
Oh, they're awesome.
A lot of your listeners will know, and they're kind of like Chilean refugees or sort of immigrant slash refugees. You know, they're a family. They've been playing for years. So that's Friday night in the tent. But we also have the Block Rock going on between the Mercury and the Community Center. We have about half a dozen bands playing 30-minute set. It's packed. Like, people just flip back and forward between the Mercury and the CNC.
We're talking about Friday, and it's really a party atmosphere. And I know a lot of families like to wander through on Saturday. So what can they look for?
Well, three things. So the street fair. This year we have about 100 more vendors than we had last year. We're having almost 400 vendors on 13th. We got people coming in from BC and Winnipeg and Edmonton, and about 30 vendors coming down from Saskatoon. If the weather's good, it'll be a real great shopping day. At the same time, in the green space and behind Holy Rosary, we're having kind of a kids' carnival, and we call it Funville. So we got the balloon guy, and, you know, we got jugglers and the puffy people, and we're sponsored, Funville sponsored by Sask Milk. So they're sending a bunch of volunteers over in cow costume. That'll be fun, and we're going to have a tug of war. The mayor is going to be there.
What about under the big tent as far as entertainment that you think is going to be cool on Saturday?
Saturday night, we have everybody's favorite, Library Voices, the Library Voices, and I'm kind of a boomer, right? So I miss these guys, but I'm told they were rock gods back in the 90s. The Library Voices are playing the tent on Saturday night, and Megan Nash is playing as well, and she's kind of our big headliner on the Saturday night. We have some thrash metal bands at the Community Center, and then down at St. Mary's Church, we have the Northern Light Old-Timey Music Banjo Collective doing a sort of traditional old-time kind of two-step country dance.
Don Young, Cathedral Village Arts Festival back again this year. Great catch-up, Don. I wish you well, and I know you're going to work tirelessly behind the scenes. To you and all the volunteers, thank you.
Yeah, and thanks for your interest. Very much appreciated.
Lots to travel to see around town, as you just heard, the Cathedral Village Arts Festival on this weekend. And next month, Mosaic. The celebration of cultures from around the globe returns, and I got a family pack here, 2 adults, 2 youth, kids. Save you some money if you want to go. Text me your first and last name. 10th text through will win. 1-877-300-7275 for a family pack to check out Mosaic. The passports will be in your hand if you're the 10th text. 1-877-300-7275. Earlier I had the mayor on, and we talked about what everyone else is talking about, how much their property taxes have gone up, and the mayor offering, well, his take is, you know what, they're playing catch-up. He kind of tends to sound like, you know, because our taxes didn't go up the last few councils, And mayors, we're starting to pay for it all now here. Part of the reason anyhow. But you know what? This is Public Works Week, and that's something I asked the mayor to explain about too.
Yeah, so it's super exciting this week. May 18th to 24th is Public Works Week. And so actually today is Public Works Day. So there's going to be an open house at the Public Works Yard. We're going to have a number of, I think we're going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 kids coming to visit, check out some of the heavy equipment, and really celebrate the folks that are fixing our roads and keep our water and wastewater moving and sweeping our streets and plowing our roads and all that. So yeah, it's really exciting, and there's a lot of amazing, hardworking people that that we get to celebrate today.
Well, there's something I think I can join you in saluting all of those those workers for sure. Property taxes not so much right now, my friend, but still, you always come on the show every Thursday. We do appreciate it, and have a great day there. Enjoy your day.
You too. Thanks, Greg.
Mayor Chad Baczynski. Hey, big movie opening tonight in Regina. The 8th and allegedly final installment of the Mission Impossible franchise hitting the big screen. I got my tickets for the IMAX on Saturday to see this one. It is The Final Reckoning Part 2. I just rewatched the first part a few weeks ago, and now I'm all set to go. But Tom Cruise still hanging on to airplanes for dear life.
Our lives are the sum of our choices. This is your calling. Your destiny.
I don't want to ruin anything for any audience. This is a culmination of the last 30 years of making Mission Impossible in this story, but I'm not going to ruin anything. You're going to have to go see it.
Yeah, I can't wait to see this one. As Cruise has been out promoting this Mission Impossible, he was also asked about a Top Gun 3.
Yeah, we're thinking and we're talking about many different stories and thinking about what could we do and what's possible. It took me 35 years to, you know, figure out Top Gun Maverick with things, but so all of these things we're working on, you know, we're discussing Days of Thunder and Top Gun Maverick, and I'm, you know, there's a numerous other films that we're actively working on right now.
And if you've seen the trailers, you see him hanging on the biplane 10,000 feet up in the air. He said the most dangerous stunt is the show's finale in the sub.
Oh, without question. It was, you know, we had to develop the mask, and companies that actually, there's technology. We're inventing technology when we're doing these movies. And it takes years of preparation. You know, I mean, one movie goes into the next. Like, if you look at the aerial sequences that I've done and started all the way back from Top Gun, the very first Top Gun has an influence here.
But boy, he loves movie making, doesn't he? And this one looks pretty epic. Also in theaters this weekend, though, challenging him for the top spot is that reboot of Lilo and Stitch, the live action version. Probably going to do big business too this weekend.